Welcome to those who are tuned in online. It is a warm day in California, so we're appreciative that the air is quite a bit cooler in here than it has been over the last few weeks. We appreciate being able to meet, especially having a potluck in a cooler environment. There, before I get started with the sermon, there is another announcement I wanted to read personally. This is a very sad announcement. From John Pinelli, pastor of Eugene in Portland, Oregon, Seattle, and Spokane, Washington, as well as British Columbia, Canada. He said, "It is with mixed emotions that we inform you of the death of my father, Richard Pinelli. While we are saddened in losing him, we are grateful that he is asleep, awaiting the resurrection to eternal life. He died peaceably approximately 5 a.m. this morning in Vancouver, Washington. Richard Robert Pinelli was born in Chicago, Illinois, July 25th, 1937. He was called into the church and baptized in 1956, attended Ambassador College from 1956 to 1961, and he married Mary Porter in 1960. He says, "My father was ordained into the ministry in the fall of 1963, and he would serve God's people in numerous locations and capabilities, or capacities rather, in Canada and the United States over the next 56 years. He was preceded by his grandson, Justin. He's survived by his sister, Eileen Pinelli, which has visited here before, his wife, Mary, son, Jonathan, daughter, Adrian, daughter-in-law, Debbie, and grandchildren, Keegan and Emery. The visitations will take place on Tuesday the 16th, and the funeral and interment will take place Wednesday, July 17th, this coming Wednesday at 10 a.m. in Vancouver." Have you ever had a vivid dream of something happening, something taking place in a dream, and then you woke up and felt like that dream was real? The other night I had a dream. Very few times do I ever have bad dreams, or if I do, I don't remember them. But I had a dream I was writing a sermon, and as I was writing the sermon in my dream, I don't know whether I was half asleep or not, but I was thinking, this is great. I want to remember this because this is a good sermon topic. I want to speak on it. The next day, I remembered having the dream, but that was it. Couldn't remember all of that work that I put into planning it, but did remember the dream. I'm hoping that maybe it'll be a reoccurring dream, and I can finish that and take notes. I think I need to put a notepad next to my bed so I can wake myself up and write it down before I forget. But definitely an odd dream. My wife worked at SEP in Minnesota when we had summer educational program back in the church years ago, and she worked in water skiing. She woke up one night. This was after camp. It was back in Ambassador College in the dorm, but woke up, and she was on her bed thinking that she was still on a boat, and that she had a camper out in the water that was skiing, and it was dark, and she couldn't find the camper. And, of course, one of those dreams that get your heart racing a little bit. I've had dreams where I thought something was taking place, and I thought I had knocked over something from the stand next to me, and I'm reached out. I'm holding on to the side table next to the bed, end table, and asked my wife to flip on the light because everything was about to fall over, and she flipped on the light, and I'm just holding a nice, steady table, thinking it's so real. I want to look at a dream today that is actually a vision, and a man had, and he remembered what he dreamt about, and he wrote it down, and it has very real implications of what is going to take place in the very near future. What he dreamt is ahead for us and something that we're going to hopefully be alive to see take place, because we know imminently the things that will happen afterward. Revelation chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13. This is John's vision, and he said, "I stood upon the sand of the sea, And I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And upon his horns, 10 crowns. And upon his heads, the name of blasphemy. Pretty vivid, pretty odd dream. I don't think I've ever dreamt of monsters or creatures or things that I'm not familiar with. But he wrote this down. But he also understood it's very symbolic. Now in chapter 10, he was told, he was giving this vision and he was seeing things and he went to write things down. He was told in chapter 10, don't write down this certain part of what you're hearing. And I'm curious what he was hearing at that time. But he was told not to write it down. Similar to Daniel, Daniel chapter 12, it said these words were closed up and sealed until the time of the end. It's written, but yet the understanding of it is revealed later, at the time of the end. So he saw two very different beasts rising up out of the sea. What do these beasts mean, and what do they represent? Chapter 2, or verse 2 rather. Verse 2, the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and its feet were the feet of a bear, its mouth the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave it its power, its seat, and its great authority. Who or what is that dragon? Well, if you've been in the church for years, you know and understand. The previous chapter, chapter 12 and verse 9 says, the great dragon was cast out. That old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world, he was cast out to the earth and his angels were cast out with him. The dragon that gives the power to the beast is Satan. So this beast power has power, it has a seat of control, it has great authority, and it gets its power not from God and not from man, but the power that is given to it is from Satan. Verse 3, I saw one of the heads, as it were, wounded to death, and its deadly wound was healed. And all of the world wondered after the beast. The New King James, or their King James Version, says, wondered. New King James says, marveled. The original writing says they admired after the beast. They weren't just looking at it in wonder, like, oh, this is something different. They were looking at it admirably. They marveled at it. In Daniel, 4 beasts are mentioned as having 7 heads and 10 horns, and the 7th head is wounded to death. And again, we know that there's a comparison between Daniel and the book of Revelation. This is the head which was dead and alive, and out of which the 10 horns or 10 kingdoms will rise. So this deadly wound was healed, the one that was administered to the Roman Empire, and it ended about AD 476. In the end time, that wound will be healed and there will be a resurrection, and that is why many are surprised and wonder, because this is a resurrection of that empire. It's a revival of that empire. Verse 4, and they worshiped the dragon. Now we know who the dragon is, and I don't think many of them probably knowingly worshiped the dragon, but they worshiped the dragon, which gave power to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like this beast, and who is able to make war with him? They were saying there's no empire like this one. There's nothing that can compare in the history of man that is like the empire that they're seeing. In the original Roman Empire, emperors demanded to be worshipped. Not just demanded to have respect given to them, but they demanded to be worshipped as gods. Here is a world-ruling empire, never as before, and they say, who is able to make war with him? The power of this kingdom is going to be obvious, and it's not going to be a centralized power. It's not going to be power that only covers Europe. We realize that power is going to be known around the world. Verse 5, and there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. Power was given to this beast power, the end time beast, for 42 months. How long does this beast power reign? 3.5 years. 42 months, for those who deal in months and years, is 3.5 years. And that period of time is known as the Great Tribulation. There are other time periods and other things that point out this 3.5 year period. It's important to know about certain time periods, and this is one of them in particular. That 3.5 year period, there are multiple things that take place. What else is going on during that time? Well, Revelation 12:14 says the church will be taken to a place of safety, the woman, and will be nourished for 3.5 years. Daniel 12:7 says the power of the people, the power of the holy people, will be scattered for 3.5 years. Daniel chapter 7 says the 10 horns and the kingdoms and the 10 kings that shall arise, another shall rise after them, they shall be diverse from the first, and shall subdue 3 kings, and they shall speak great words against the Most High. They will wear out the saints of the Most High, and they will think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand for 3.5 years, times and a half. Revelation 11 verse 2 says the holy city, Jerusalem, will be trodden underfoot for 3.5 years. So all of this is a 3.5 year period that's taking place, and it is that same 3.5 years that has given power to the beast to be able to fulfill what is going to happen at the end of this age. Verse 6, and he opened his mouth and blasphemy against God and blasphemed his name and the tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given to him to make war with the saints. Now, other translations say it was granted, but it was granted by Satan. It wasn't God granting Satan to be able to go make war with the saints. It was given to him, it was given to this beast power by Satan to make war with the saints. And it says, to overcome them, and power was given to him over all kindreds, tongues, and nations. This is why we realize this power that is going to rise is not just something that is going to be in Europe. It's not just going to be something on another continent. It says all kindreds, all tongues, and all nations. He's given power over. Verse 8, and it says, all that dwell on the earth shall worship him. So we realize the surface and what is covered by the beast power is going to be all that dwell on the earth. And it doesn't say we'll have to come under his submission. It says we'll worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. He said there are some who do not come under this power. There are some who do not give up their service to God. And he said, all who worship him except those whose names were written in the book. Everyone will end up worshiping this power except those who remain faithful. And he says in verse 9, if any man have an ear, let him hear. If God has opened your mind, and he says, pay attention, listen, this is important. Barnes Note says, the idea here is that that was said in respecting to the beast was worthy of special attention as it pertained to the most important events in the history of the church. So I say it was making it very clear, if you have the ability to understand what is being said, and it has been given to us, pay attention, listen to what is being said. Verse 10, he that leads into captivity shall go into captivity, and he that kills with the sword will be killed by the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. The saints are going to be tested. And I'm not going to give a sermon about the saints and who the saints are. But all the living saints at that time, or converted members at that time, will be tested. And we know it is going to be a great test as the rest of the world worships this beast power. The rest of the world falls under that power. But those who are faithful will resist it. It includes those who are part of the Laodicean era of the church. Some say, well, the Laodiceans just fall right in, they just do what they're told, and they're not a part of the church. Well, when we look at the message to the churches, and Laodicean church is a church, the church is the called out ones, they will suffer, and there is another innumerable multitude that have to suffer through things. But he says it's going to include the saints. Now we see the second beast in verse 11. It says, and behold, another beast coming up out of the earth. And he had 2 horns like a lamb, but spoke like a dragon. Now, lamb symbolizes, as we've just come through the spring holy day, symbolizes Jesus Christ. It symbolizes something innocent, pure, and Jesus Christ was the lamb. This is like a lamb, but spoke like a dragon. It's like a spiritual leader. And that's why it's so easy for people to say, well, yeah, I can worship a spiritual leader. What an example. He is a leader and everybody respects him as being a spiritual leader. And they will worship this other beast. But it looks like a lamb, spoke like a dragon. John 1:29 tells us that John sees Jesus coming to him and said, "Behold the Lamb of God." Jesus Christ is called the Lamb. In verse 36 of chapter 1 of John, it says, "Behold the Lamb of God." As looking on Jesus as he walked, he said it again, "Behold the Lamb of God." In ancient Israel, the blood of the Lamb was symbolic of forgiveness, and the Passover Lamb represented Jesus Christ. So this beast power had horns like a lamb. It was supposed to represent something symbolically as a religious and a trusted religious individual or group. But yet it spoke like a dragon. So it looked like a religious power, but it spoke with the power of Satan. Verse 12, "And it exercises all of the power of the first beast before him." So this second power, this religious head, once something that looks like a religious leader, exercises all of the power of the first beast before it. International Standard Version says, "uses all of the authority of the first beast before it." He's in control of that first beast. "And he causes the earth and them which dwell in there to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed." This is a worshiped power. And he causes the world to worship the beast. So it is a religious power that is in control. It says in verse 13, "He does great wonders, and so that he makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men." People are likely to say, oh, this is another Elijah, this is a prophet, this is a holy individual because he does great wonders and he can bring down fire from heaven. Quite impressive, but even what we just covered in the children of Israel coming out of Egypt, when they came out of Egypt, when they were in the process of performing miracles before Pharaoh, Pharaoh's magicians also performed miracles, turning a staff into a snake. I don't know of individuals that can do that unless there's other powers involved. But miracles have been performed in the past by individuals. But we have to realize just because an individual performs miracles does not mean that he's religious. But people already will look at this individual and say, he looks like a lamb, he speaks like a dragon, but this is a religious figure. And he's trusted. And when miracles and great wonders back it up, individuals will be deceived. 2 Thessalonians 2:9 tells us that Satan has powers and signs and lying wonders. And that's why over and over we're told, don't be deceived by these things. Don't be deceived by all these powers. Because if you don't have a good solid foundation at the end of the age, when the miracles do begin to happen, people will say, oh, even within the church, is this a true thing or not? Is this God's miracle or is this the miracle of an individual? Verse 14, "He deceives them that dwell on the earth by means of the miracles, which he had power to do in the sight of the beast." So he is doing these miracles in the sight of this great power, the beast, "saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live." So because of these miracles or signs, people of the world will listen to the beast power. They will, as happened with King Nebuchadnezzar, an image was built to it, and people were told, you have to worship this image, you have to worship the beast. But they're deceived by the miracles. They're deceived by wonders. But we don't have to be. Matthew chapter 24. Matthew 24 is another place that is tied in with the prophecies of what is to take place at the very end of the age. 24 and verse 21 says, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as will not since the beginning of the world to this time nor ever shall be." A great tribulation. Now, the great tribulation, we already seen, is 3.5 years long. "And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened." God says there are elect, those he has called, he has chosen, who remain faithful, and he says, because of the elect, those days will be shortened. We don't know how much time was shortened off of that. When we look at the time plan, looking at 6,000 years and 1,000-year millennium, we realize we're very close to the end of the age. And some say we have to fill out exactly 6,000 years. If a time is cut short, we don't know how much it is cut short by. But it tells us it will be cut short. "Then if any man say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not, for there shall false Christ and false prophets arise, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect." He said there's also other individuals, false Christs and false prophet, who are able to do miracles. And Satan is probably more than willing to give power to individuals that they are able to perform wonders and unique things that are difficult or not impossible to explain. But miracles and signs will happen. And he says, if it is possible, if you are close to God and if you are prepared and understand what is ahead, it shouldn't be possible. But he says it is possible that they should even deceive the very elect. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 3. A message that was given to the church, and often the warnings of do not be deceived. How often do you see messages to the rest of the world going out and tell the world not to be deceived? We just read Revelation 12:9. It says the whole world is deceived by Satan. To be deceived means you have the truth. You're not deceived. Don't be deceived. So it says, "Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come first a falling away, or apostasia in the Greek. And the man of sin will be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And we know that man will eventually be destroyed." You go down to verse 8, and it says, "Then shall that wicked," says, "then shall the wicked be revealed," that's in the King James, or "the lawless one, then shall that lawless one be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, and with power, signs, and lying wonders." Again, Satan is the one supplying the power, supplying wonders and miracles to be done through these particular individuals. It says in verse 10, "With all deceivableness and unrighteousness in them that perish, because they received not a love of the truth that they should be saved." A love of the truth. People get so caught up in emotion and get caught up in physical miracles, get caught up in speaking like a lamb or looking like a lamb, thinking, well, this religious figure, it's got to be something good. He's making such great changes. He's doing so much for the world. If you don't have a love for the truth, it is easy to be deceived. And he says, don't be deceived. Don't get caught up. You have to have a love for the truth. And that love for the truth, just as when we counsel individuals for baptism, we say you have to count the cost. You have to be willing to give up your life. You have to be willing to give up everything to follow him. Not say, well, surely he doesn't mean I have to be put to death. Well, individuals have in the past for the truth. And he said, you have to have a love of the truth. And he said, the deceivableness of unrighteousness and then they perish because they did not have a love for the truth, that they might be saved. When we compare these two horned beast of Revelation 13 and Revelation 19, we see a few things. They both perform miracles. They both perform them before or in the sight of the beast. And with them, both the false prophet and the horned beast deceive them that have the mark of the beast. Those who receive it, those who fall under its power, are deceived by it. From this we see that the false prophet and the man of sin and the woman that rode the beast are all picturing a counterfeit Christianity, a false religion, something that individuals are deceived by. So the two beasts appear as the beast and the false prophet, and they align at the time of the end, and the first one ruling and making war, the other one deceives people through religion. It's like playing good cop, bad cop. We got both ends of the spectrum. We will cover religion, we'll cover government. Let's go back to Revelation chapter 13 now. Revelation 13 and verse 15. For many of you, this is a reminder. For others, maybe the first time you really took a look at the beast's power and the prophecy of how it's going to come to power and what is going to take place. But it's a good reminder, and it's something that needs to be on our minds, especially with what's taking place in the world. Revelation 13, verse 15, said he had power to give life to the image of the beast, and that the image of the beast would both speak and cause as many as would not worship the beast that they should be killed. A religious power that is going to help kill anyone who does not come under its authority. Anyone who does not submit to it. The beast power is going to try to kill and destroy. Clearly, when we think of testing of the saints and testing of the faith, the patience of the saints, it is going to take place, especially for those who are not in that place of safety and protection for that 3.5 year period. Revelation 19:20 says the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet who wrought miracles before him and which deceived those. Who did he deceive? Those that had received the mark of the beast and had worshipped his image. If they receive the mark of the beast and they worship the image, they are deceived. And we saw what happened. If they are deceived and do not have a love for the truth, he says they perish. The last thing we'd want is to perish after deception, not perish because we have a love for the truth. But some will be tested to death. Revelation 17:16 says, I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. It says this woman, not the church at this point, this is the other woman, the false church, is drunken with the blood of the saints and is going to cause death to those who do not submit to the power of the beast. Verse 16, and he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. This is a mark that's often discussed, and people come up with ideas of what that could be. There are a lot of ideas and possibilities now with technology. It's eye scanning and fingerprint scanning, and some say, well, that's exactly what it is. It's the fingerprints, it's the eye. Others say, well, no, it's a particular mark. Some believe it's a chip that's put under the skin, which is now another thing that's being done. I remember back in late 70s, early 80s, people said, yep, there's going to be a chip put under the skin that reads everything and tells all of your information. That's now something that is being done in other countries. So some think it's going to be a chip under the skin. Others say, no, there's going to be a tattoo. You're going to have a tattoo on your hand and on your forehead. Well, that would be very noticeable if somebody didn't have that. You don't have a tattoo on your forehead. What other references are given to something very similar when we look at God's law? Deuteronomy 6 and verse 6 says, and these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign upon your hand, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes. They'll be on your forehead. He said, my laws and the Sabbath day are going to be a sign that's on your hand and on your forehead. Here the beast, the image of the beast, has a similar sign. They receive a mark, something that identifies them as being a part of the beast power. Just as keeping God's law and keeping the Sabbath day are a sign upon our hand, upon our head. Jews actually made square pieces of parchment that had God's law written on it and would tie it around their wrist so it's on their hand, and they would wear it around their forehead with a band so you have this little box with God's law on it. Well, it doesn't do very much good if it's not in your heart. And that's what he was telling them here in Deuteronomy. I command you that this day that these commands are in your heart, not just something visible as a box on your head. But he wanted them to have the law and what they did with their hand and what they thought with their minds. He said it would be a sign, it would be a symbol for them. And he wanted it ingrained in their minds. What's one of the consequences for not following this beast? Verse 17, he said, no man, or that no man, might buy or sell, except he has the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Now some think, well, the tattoo is 666. Well, it says whether it has the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. He said, if you don't have that, you're not going to buy or sell. It will control commerce. Somehow there's going to be a breaking or contradicting of God's commandments. And God says, if you hold to the truth, if you do not fall under the submission of this beast power, if you do not receive its mark, yeah, there's penalties for it from man. But God says, you have to have a love for the truth. But individuals will submit to the beast power to be able to engage in buying and selling. And if they don't, they will not be able to buy and sell. Now, if that's computer reading, something, they read fingerprints, or they're able to pull up all of your identity and they say, oh, you've refused to work on Saturday, so you cannot have the ability to buy. But we see a religious political system that controls world finances. It's not just that they are a military power, that is a financial empire. An interesting quote from Thomas Jefferson, back in 1802. He said, I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around these banks will deprive the people of property until the children wake up homeless and on a continent that their fathers had not conquered. That was back in 1802. And we realize now, with the less and less exchange of even money, money is exchanges hands less and less. Everything is done digitally. Everything is controlled and recorded. With the crumbling economic system worldwide, how well would this concept of a one-world economy be accepted? We see countries who are financially, as ours is, broke, just keeping the head above water. But to have a system come in and say, we're going to have one world economy, we're going to solve all the world's problems when everybody follows the same economy. That has already been proposed. It's something that has been pushed, and it's something that is continuing to be pushed, and it will take place. CBS News, this is back in 2011, says the UN recommended one world economy and replacing the US dollar. BBC.com from February of this year. Studying the demise of historic civilizations can tell us how much risk we face in today's collapse, or by collapse, today's collapse expert, Luke Kemp. He says, worryingly, the signs are worsening. He says a collapse of civilization is imminent, and the signs are worsening. And so he says the collapse is often quick, and the greatness provides no immunity. The Roman Empire covered 4.4 million square miles in 390. 5 years later, it had plummeted to 2 million square miles. And by 476, the empire's reach was zero. To have a world-ruling empire go from being in control of much of the known world to nothing. He says, "We will only march into a collapse if we advance blindly. We are only doomed if we are unwilling to listen to the past." And man is very good at not listening to the past. Not listening and not learning from history. But he says we're doomed to repeat it. When there is a one-world economy ran by a religious power, you have a religious leader leading it, there's one-world economy, how easy will it be for others or for the beast power to say, you either join or you're not going to buy or sell because we control all of the economy of the world. I saw yesterday in Brussels, there's a European leadership team preparing to meet. Ursula von der Leyen, nominee for the European Commission president, has called for a United States of Europe modeled after the federal systems of Germany, Switzerland, and the U.S. She served as Germany's defense minister since 2013, and she is calling for a United States of Europe. She's asking that all of these be combined, and this is an upcoming meeting. And again, it's nothing new. We have seen that. We have seen individuals trying to bring the unification of Europe to a head. They want it to happen. But it is being pushed at. Verse 18. Here is the wisdom. This is saying, this is what's important to understand. Let him that has understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of man. And his number is 666, or his number is 666. That number has become so superstitious to individuals, like the number 13. You can't have 13 floors, you can't have a number 13 on anything because 13 is a superstitious number. 666. People panic when they hear that number. Years ago when we were in Monterey for the Feast of Tabernacles, our count one day, the guy who was doing the count for me on the ushering crew came and he said, "I hate to even give you this number for today's attendance. It's 666. And he said, "We have searched the halls and couldn't find anyone else, so we could not have that particular number." And he almost felt bad that that was our number for the day. Before services were over, he came back and he said, "There's a man out in the hall. He's been there every day and he's got a laptop and he's sitting in the hall." And he said, "I asked him if he was with our group." So he said, "Change that to 667. It's just that number. People think, "Oh, 666, that's a horrible number. It's something that, and again, in the end time, it will be." But what is it? What does it mean? In the Greek language, each letter is associated with a number. And there's some who have tried to figure out, well, what does his name mean? What is the meaning of 666? Barnes states the counting of the number of the beast in Revelation 13:16. It says the number of his name, and the word rendered here count means properly to count or to reckon with pebbles, to counter, to reckon, or to estimate. So estimating or figuring up and reckoning the number of his name. The word here means to compute, that is, to ascertain exact import of the numbers, so to identify the beast. The number, which is immediately specified, 600, 666, or 666. The phrase, the number of the beast, means that somehow this number was also connected with the beast or would represent its name or its character, and that the beast would be identified by its proper application. Now, I can tell you, I don't know what this is, how this is going to be fulfilled at the end, but if we're aware it is going to take place, and we're asking God to protect us from it, asking God to help us to remain faithful and strong, and there is a love for His truth that we have the ability to, just as individuals who were tested before, they didn't make the decision and gain the faith last minute. They had the faith all the way along, and they had a love for the truth. But He said, by this, the beast power would be identified. Another explanation is that the Bible associates the number with the number of man, and that God made him on the sixth day of the creation. The number 666 is a simple repetition of the number of man. 666, man, man, man. And it says that the number of man emphasizes that the beast power represents governments who has a human base or human authority and is opposed to God's authority. Whatever that number is, it's telling us, here is the wisdom. There's something important. As with the mark of the beast, God's people will reject it. They will reject the mark. They will reject the number of his name. They will reject worshiping the image. And it says, they will have the victory over the beast, over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name. Revelation 15:2. So it says, God's people will have victory over the beast. Over the image, over the mark, and over the number of his name. All three of those, whatever they may be. It's very similar to those who rejected the commanded worship when they were taken into captivity in history. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, they were told to worship an image. They were told to worship a world-ruling empire. And yet they remained faithful. Some believe it's the microchips placed under the skin. Some believe it's our social security numbers, that everybody has a social security number and that's going to be their mark. We have to be careful in dogmatically stating what Scripture doesn't tell us and taking things into our own mind and thoughts and saying, well, seems to me like it's this, and then running with it. I think when the time is right, just as it says these things are sealed up until the time of the end, it will be very plain. But we also know if we are holding fast to the truth, if you're holding fast to the Sabbath, you hold fast to the laws of God, if it is a challenge against us going against God's law, it's going to be very visible because we know God's law. Whether we know what these other things are or not, it will be clear. If it is a command to worship on the Sabbath day, that's very clear. We're not going to do it. If it's a command, you have to follow the beast power, you have to follow this European power and submit to its authority, or you're not going to buy and sell. Well, then I'm not going to buy and sell. You have to hold fast. If you know those things are coming, God says, have a love for the truth, and it will protect you from being deceived. What we do know is whatever it is, we're going to have the choice, a choice to be able to be made. Because he says, his people, his elect, will choose not to follow it. We also know that those who do receive the mark will suffer the seven last plagues. And there's verses in Revelation 15:1, 15:6, 16:1-2 that talk about individuals who will suffer because they receive that mark. We'll look more at the beast power and what the Bible has to explain from Scripture. It's also found in the fourth beast of Daniel chapter 7. Revelation chapter 17. Revelation 17 verse 12. It says, the ten horns which you saw are ten kings. So this vision that Daniel's having, and he's seeing this beast power, he reveals what they are. The ten horns are ten kings which have received no kingdom as of yet. So you have individuals who are kings but no kingdom. They've come to power, but they don't have anywhere to rule. But they receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. So now we see things, the symbolisms being revealed. He said these are ten kings, ten world leaders who are given power for a short time together. Verse 13, they have one mind, meaning they come together just as we read in Acts chapter 2. They were all with one accord, they were with one mind, they were all thinking the same thing. Here it says they were of one mind and they shall give their power and strength to the beast. Ten rulers who say, we're going to allow you to do whatever, we're giving our power to you of everything that we have control over. Verse 14, these shall make war with the Lamb. They're going to make war with Christ, but the Lamb will overcome them. For he is Lord of lords, King of kings, and they that are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. At the very end, those who are with Jesus Christ, when he overcomes this beast power, he said they're called, and just being called doesn't cut it. We know many are called, few are chosen. He says they're called, they're chosen, meaning he chose them, he placed his spirit in them, and they're faithful. Some think, well, if I'm called and I have God's spirit, I just wait for the end. We have to be faithful. And we have to have a love for the truth. Called, chosen, and faithful. Verse 15, he said to me, the waters which you saw, the waters which this beast was coming out of, where the horse sits, are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. This is important to know because it's in other places as well. So out of the world's population, multitudes, nations, and tongues, the beast power is going to rise up. And again, the vision begins to make sense. It doesn't come as an alien invasion, and people think, well, this beast power is going to be nothing like before. It's just going to come out of nowhere, and it's going to be foreign to anything that exists today. It's not an alien invasion. Some people have that idea. It is coming out of the world's population, multitudes, nations, and tongues. So who is the whore that rides this beast? Revelation 17 and verse 3. Revelation 17 and verse 3. So he carried me away into the spirit, into the wilderness. So he's having another vision, another dream. And I see a woman sit upon a scarlet colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand and full of the abominations and filthiness of her fornication. You've seen this on the front of our booklets. A woman riding a beast, and she's got the goblet in her hand with wine. Upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abomination of the earth. The beast is a symbol of a government. And the Bible has already declared that. A woman is, in prophecy, symbolized by a church or a religious organization. And here, one from which other harlots have come or came into being. When an individual or a church goes off away from God, which it has in the past, it's called harlotry, just as it is having a relationship with God. And if we are to go off and go out with other religions and other ideas and other cultures that take us away from God, he says, now that's like the same as in a husband and wife relationship going astray. And as it here portrays a woman who is a whore. But it is a Babylonian religion. Mystery, Babylon the Great. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 2 says, I'm jealous over you with a godly jealousy, for I have espoused you to one husband, talking to the church, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. We are to be a chaste virgin. This is something that is totally opposite. It's receiving all of the knowledge and information of the world and getting caught up in religious deception and not being a chaste virgin to Christ. Revelation 19:7 says, let us be glad, rejoice, and give honor to him, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. God refers to the woman, the church, as being in a marital relationship. This is a woman who is a religious symbol, but it isn't a marital relationship, but it's going out and going with all the different religions of the world. Revelation 12 and verse 13. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 13. It says, when the dragon saw that he was cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman. Now, here we see the symbolism of a woman again in the book of Revelation. He persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. This is a different woman, different religion. And to the woman, symbolic of a church, were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for times and a half a time, 3.5 years, from the face of the serpent, from the great dragon. So she's protected in her place. She's nourished for this 3.5 years from Satan's abilities. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood. Now, we just saw in the beast power, it says the water which the beast power rose out of are nations, peoples, and countries. It is armies, physical armies. So it says that the serpent cast out of his mouth a flood. It's not that a physical flood. We sometimes picture running through the desert near Petra and this giant flood is there and the earth cracks open and all the water goes away. Dealing in symbolisms, he casts out a flood after people of God. But it is armies that are sent to destroy. Going back and looking at the parallels of the past, learning from history. The armies that chased the children of Israel, and God removed them as well. It says, the earth helped the woman. The earth opened up her mouth and swallowed the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed. Now we're looking at, okay, God is not going to allow him to persecute the woman. So he says he goes after the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. It's the remnant of her seed. It's the remnant of the church, but they're going to be persecuted. And Satan is going to go after them with great desire. This woman, the whore, has an attitude that she's untouchable. And when we see the symbolisms of the two different women that are portrayed, it's clear to understand. Revelation 18:7 says, how much she has glorified herself and lived deliciously, and so much torment and sorrow give her. And she says in her heart, I sit a queen, I am no widow, and I see no sorrow. But yet what happens? Revelation 17, verse 16. Revelation 17, verse 16. The 10 horns which you saw upon the beast, these shall hate the whore. Now you have what typically happens with governments turning on themselves. You see 10 horns, the 10 kings which were upon the beast, shall hate the whore, shall hate the religious leader that is ruling it. And shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And the woman which you saw is that great city which reigns over kings of the earth. So it says, this woman, this religious symbol, is a great city. What is that great city? Well, many think, well, it's Rome or it's Vatican City. It is a great religious city that is given power over the beast. All indications show that it will somehow become so difficult in the end times that these nations will give their authority to it, to one who seems to be able to turn things around. But then as the world begins to go into chaos and this beast power is consuming the world, it says these horns begin to hate the leadership that is ruling it. New system is called the beast. Again, is nothing less as what we saw earlier, Babylon, the Holy Roman Empire revived, or Mystery Babylon the Great. And people have been looking for something to save them from things like this for a long time. Economy, wars, terrorism, things that are happening. If a religious leader comes in and says, I'm going to control everything, I'm going to, because I have such a moral base and background, I'm the one that should control the nations of the world. It will look as though it's going to save lives. But it's even more persuasive when we see who's leading it. A religious leader who's able to perform miracles, to perform things to where individuals say, not only does he look like a lamb and looks like a religious leader, but he's performing miracles too. So he's got power. God must be working in him. The Cyclopedia of Biblical theological and ecclesiastical literature, explains that the first pope, Leo I, to him the Roman government was one of the most marvelous things on the earth, and from its structure he formed the first papacy. Meyer's Ancient History says that during Leo's reign, the church within the Roman Empire was set up as the first ecclesiastical state, the first church government, and a government of people. And even the structure of the Catholic Church was founded after Rome. When we compare Matthew's account to Revelation, we're told to be warned, to take heed to the warning. Revelation chapter 19. Revelation 19 and verse 19. It says, I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on a horse and against his army. The beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that performed miracles before him, and which he deceived them that received the mark of the beast, them that worshipped his image, and these were both cast alive into the lake of the fire burning with brimstone. It says the beast power is going to be destroyed. And the false prophet, and all of those who submitted to it. They received the mark. These were all cast into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone. The beast power is going to see its end. The Roman Empire, this revival of the Babylonian mystery religion, or mystery system, is going to be destroyed one final time. Revelation 18 and verse 1. Revelation 18, verse 1. It says, after these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried with a mighty strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen. Now again, the system is a beast power. It's a revival of the Roman Empire, but it's also called Babylon the Great because it's a power and a revolt against God going back to the beginning of time. It's fallen and has become the habitation of devils and holds every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all nations have drunk of the wine of her wrath, of her fornication. The world has just fallen right in line with what she was providing. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. This is why she's called the whore, because kings of the earth, in a mutual agreement between government and religion, have fallen in with her. And it even says that they have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Verse 4, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people. Now, my people are referring to the church, referring to those who have his spirit. Christ said in Paul said in Romans, if you do not have the spirit of Christ, you're none of his. Come out of her, my people. He said, don't get caught up in this system. Do not be partakers of her sins, that you receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Saying, as bad as it gets, do not get caught up in this religious system that is coming. This world-ruling empire that says, you join us, everything will be taken care of, we'll provide all your needs. It's going to be destroyed. It's temporary. When many saw the EU start to form, they thought, okay, when it gets to 10... that's when it's going to happen. And it got to 10, and it got to more than 10, and it got up over 20. Individuals thought, well, when it gets to 10, the beast power is going to be complete. And there's been, again, more than 20, 25. Some now believe that, well, it's going to start dropping down, and when it drops down to 10, that's when it's going to happen. What Scripture tells us is simply that 10 kings or 10 governments are going to give their power to the beast. You could have 25 nations as a part of European Union, 10 of them give their power to the beast, and it's enough to give world ruling change because Satan is providing the power behind it. major changes are in store for the world, and it is going to take place. I want to read from just a couple of articles, things that have been written in the not so far back history. Pope calls for a new world order. Now, nothing new. We see that happening from time to time. This is from January 14th, 2004. Increasingly dissatisfied with the ability of the United Nations to get anything done and commanding enough respect to maintain peace, Pope John Paul II issued a call for a new international power to replace the one that emerged from the Second World War. Now, Pope calling for a world power, one ruling government, is not something new. Satan is trying to stir it up, and it may be God delayed it at that time, 2004. This is from 2009. The Pope calls for a global authority on the economy, July 7, 2009. Reuters report that Pope Benedict called on Tuesday for a world political authority to manage the global economy and for more government regulations and national economies to pull the world out of the current crisis and avoid a repeat. The Pope made it clear, or made his call, for a rethink of the way the world economy has been run in a new encyclical, which touched a number of social issues, but whose remain connected thread was how the current crisis has affected both the rich and the poor nations. And he said, we need somebody to come in as a global authority. The Pope claims the economy needs to be controlled in the same way as governments. Benedict said that there is an urgent need for a true world political authority. A political authority. One. Whose task would be to manage the global economy, to revive economies hit by the crisis, and to avoid any deterioration in the present crisis and the greater imbalances that would result. Such an authority would have to be regulated by law and would need to be universally recognized and vested with the effective power to ensure security for all in regard of justice and respect for rights. Well, you have a Pope going, you need to have somebody who can be trusted and who is religious and who trusts in the Lord. Universally recognized and vested with the effective power. At the end, there will be a religious figure who is universally recognized and exactly is vested with effective power, power given to it by Satan. 2 days later, it says the Pope endorses world political authority. July 8th, 2009 by Cliff Kincaid. Some in the media are calling it just a statement about the economic justice, but Pope Benedict's Charity in Truth statement, also known as an encyclical, is radical documents that put the Roman Catholic Church firmly on the side of an emerging world government. Years ago, we would have thought, oh, wow, this is it. It's written down. This was back in 2009. Back in the 70s and 80s, early 90s even, the talk of a Catholic Church ruling a world ruling government, if we would have seen that in the papers, it would have shocked us. But it's been that slow, gradual move toward that, and we cannot just blindly overlook what is taking place. It says, in an explicit, direct language, the Pope calls for a true world political authority to manage the affairs of the entire world. At the same time, however, the Pope also warns that such an international order would produce a dangerous universal power of a tyrannical nature and must be guarded against somehow. Let's put a religious figure in there to make sure it's guarded against. The New York Times got it right this time, noting that the Pope's call for a world political authority mounted to endorsement of a new world economic order, a longtime goal of the old Soviet-sponsored international communist movement, and a highlight of the Pope's call for new world order that needs to have teeth. The Pope's shocking endorsement of a world political authority which has prophetic implications for some Christians who fear a global dictator will take power in the last days of man and reign the earth. And it comes shortly after United Nations conference on the world financial economic crisis issued for global taxes and the more powerful global institutions. In terms of how this new world political authority should look, the Pope says it should have teeth in the form of authority to ensure the compliance and the decisions of all parties, in other words, force or kill, force or destroy, needs to have teeth to ensure compliance, and also with the coordinated measures adopted by various international forums. So he goes on to say the social order should conform to the moral order. Government should conform to religion. I find it interesting the way it's written there, that a social order should conform to moral order, or the state should conform to religion. The beast power is prophesied to happen, and we for years have looked at it. We've looked at what's taking place, and we see it coming together, along with other prophecies that are talked about and what's going to take place, especially during that 3.5-year period. It has been coming together for some time. And the woman who rides the beast is preparing for religious rule. They have been pushing for that. And that has been for some time as well. We know it's coming. We know that it is something that God has prophesied is going to take place. He's revealed to us enough understanding that we understand there's a choice to be made, and that if you have a love for the truth, and if you understand His law, His way of life, those other things are going to be recognized. And when you hold fast to that, he said, you will not be deceived. Will you be ready for the rise and the fall of that final beast power?